Pastor John Randall reminds us God is in control and has a plan.
Listen, if you don't understand this yet, God is in control of all events, past, present, future. He's the Lord of all. He's in control. And these rulers that come and these rulers that go and these political individuals that rise to power, listen, they're in the hands of God. God knows what he's doing. God has a determined end and appointed time for all things. And so when you see things beginning to come up and you see this happening and you see what we saw tonight happening, just know this, God knew about it long in advance. It's all part of his plan.
It's been estimated that more than a fourth of the Bible is predictive prophecy. And in Daniel 11, we're given over 136 prophecies. The beauty of God's word is each and every prophecy given has been or will be fulfilled. And only God could accomplish something so perfectly. Today on A Daily Walk, Pastor John Randall has another look at Daniel 11. This is history in advance.
Look at verse 13. For the king of the north will return and muster a multitude greater than the former and shall certainly come at the end of some years with a great army and much equipment. Now in those times, many shall rise up against the king of the south. Also violent men of your people shall exalt themselves in fulfillment of the vision, but they shall fall. So the king of the north shall come and build a siege mound and take a fortified city, and the forces of the south shall not withstand him. Even his choice troops shall have no strength to resist. Verse 16, but he who comes against him shall do according to his own will, and no one shall stand against him. He shall stand in the glorious land with destruction in his power. He shall also set his face to enter with strength of his whole kingdom and upright ones with him. Thus shall he do. And he shall give him the daughter of women to destroy it, but she shall not stand with him or be for him. Daniel prophesies that in verse 13, Antiochus III, who is the king of the north, regroups once again. And this time he enlists the assistance of Philip of Macedon and some of the Jews that wanted to throw off Egyptian control. And so they ended up aligning themselves with Antiochus III, and he set to go to battle. And in verse 15 and 16, it says that the king of the north ends up fighting against him. And in verse 15 and 16, it reveals that the king of the north was able to conquer Egypt, Sidon, and all of Israel. And at that time, because he had conquered the Egyptians, the Jews actually received Antiochus as their deliverer. And he offered then to negotiate with Egypt by making a political alliance through marriage. And that's what we read in verse 17. Because in verse 17, it says here, he shall give him the daughter of women to destroy it, but he shall not stand with him or before him. Antiochus III decided to make an alliance with Egypt. And so what he did is he ended up giving his youngest daughter, Cleopatra I, in betrothal to the young king who was 7 years old, by the way, Ptolemy V. His father died, and so Ptolemy IV died, so Ptolemy V ended up being the king. And so in order to make this alliance, hoping that his daughter would be loyal to him and he could eventually take over all of Egypt, he offers his daughter to the boy king. However, this plan did not work because Cleopatra, rather than remain loyal to her father and be an advocate for Syria, she actually was consistently loyal to her husband, Ptolemy V, and stood against her father. And so the alliance backfired. Things began to unravel for Antiochus III. And that is where you come to verse 18. You with me? Stay with me. After this, he shall turn his face to the coastlands and shall take many. But a ruler shall bring reproach against them to an end. And with the reproach removed, he shall turn back on him. Daniel now prophesied or was told in his prophecy that Antiochus III would continue to fight and he would take the coastlands, which by the way he did. History tells us that the coastal areas and the islands of the Mediterranean he was able to conquer. And although he experienced some initial success, when he went to set out to conquer the coastlands, he made a vital mistake. And that was, there were Romans in those regions. And at this time, Rome was just beginning to rise to power. And when Antiochus III, the Great, attacked those islands, it stirred up, if I may, the hornet's nest of Rome. And Rome would now begin to set its sights on Antiochus III to take revenge. And after he had taken the coastlands, it says here in the second half of verse 18, we read it, a ruler shall bring the reproach against them to an end, and with the reproach removed, he shall turn back on him. The ruler, or some of your translations read, the commander referred to here in Daniel's prophecy was a man named, are you ready for this? Lucius Cornelius Scipio Asiaticus. He was sent against Antiochus III, forcing him to withdraw and take refuge in Antioch in Asia Minor, which resulted in his absolute political disgrace. The Romans, fighting alongside with their Greek allies, overpowered the Syrians and forced them to withdraw from Greece, flee to Asia Minor. Then 30,000 Roman troops pursued Antiochus III into Asia and defeated his much larger army of 70,000 at the Battle of Magnesia near Smyrna in Turkey. And the Romans forced Antiochus III to sign the Treaty of Apamea. And within that treaty, Antiochus III was required to pay a great sum of money for the war that he had fought as tribute to the Romans. The only problem was he didn't have the money. And so Daniel prophesies now concerning this individual. Look at verse 19. Then he shall turn his face toward the fortress of his own land, but he shall stumble and fall and not be found. There shall arise in his place one who imposes taxes on the glorious kingdom, but within a few days he shall be destroyed, but not in anger or in battle. Antiochus III could have gone down in history as one of the great conquerors of the ancient world if he had been content to leave Greece alone. But instead, he fulfilled prophecy that is recorded here in verse 19, in that he returned to his own land defeated and completely broken. He was then killed. He was put to death for trying to rob a temple in Elam to get money in order to pay the Romans off. And from the standpoint of history, or rather the history of Israel, this was important because Antiochus the Great was followed by Seleucus the Fourth, who Daniel refers to in verse 20, who taxed the Jews to pay the Romans, and he in turn was succeeded by Antiochus the Fourth, Epiphanes. And that's important because he was the notorious persecutor of the Jews who we read about in Daniel chapter 8, described in Daniel chapter 11, verses 21 through 35. And here we come to the rise to power of Antiochus the Fourth, Epiphanes. Look at verse 21. And in his place shall arise a vile person, to whom they will not give the honor of royalty, but he shall come in peaceably and seize the kingdom by intrigue. With force of a flood, they shall be swept away from before him and be broken. Also, the prince of the covenant. After the league is made with him, he shall act deceitfully, for he shall come up and become strong with a small number of people. Antiochus the Fourth. It was back, as I said, in chapter 8, verses 9 through 14, that he was referred to as the little horn. He took the title for himself, Epiphanes, which means glorious one. And he called himself that. But the angel who gave the prophecy to Daniel simply calls him a vile person. For that's really what he was. He was vile. Verse 22 highlights that he was very successful in his military conquests. Verse 23 describes that he had various alliances with other nations, especially with Egypt, which involved a considerable amount of intrigue and deceit. He would sit down at the bargaining table with those in Egypt and never intending to keep any of the agreements that he signed upon. That sounds a lot like today. But nonetheless, that was happening even back then amongst political powers. And so by intrigue and by deceit, he was able to gain more power. And that's what Daniel records for us in verses 24 through 26, that he was growing in power. Look at what it says. He shall enter peaceably. He'll even go into the richest places of the province. He shall do what his fathers have not done, nor his forefathers. He shall disperse among them the plunder, spoil, and riches, and he shall devise his plans against the strongholds, but only for a time. And he shall stir up his power and his courage against the king of the south with a great army, and the king of the south shall be stirred up to battle with a very great and mighty army, but he shall not stand. For they shall devise plans against him. Yes, those who eat the portion of his delicacies shall destroy him. His army shall be swept away, and many shall fall down slain. It's just, again, I just have to pause and say, this is fascinating to me. Maybe not as much to some of you, hearing me read these historical facts. But listen, the fact that Daniel could write this all in advance and that it would be fulfilled, over 136 prophecies, is amazing to me concerning the prophetic nature of the word of God. Now in verse 24, it says that he attacked his enemies without warning. In a time of security or a time of peace, that's when he would attack, when they weren't ready for it, when they weren't expecting it. In verse 25, it says that he gathered a great army to fight alongside of him. But he not only grew in wealth, he not only grew in power, but he also grew in evil. And in verse 27, Daniel prophesies concerning this. He says, both these kings' hearts shall be bent on evil. They shall speak lies at the same table, but it shall not prosper, for the end will still be at the appointed time. While returning to his land with great riches, his heart shall be moved against the holy covenant, and he shall do damage and return to his own land. At the appointed time, he shall return and go forward to the south, but it shall not be like the former or the latter. In the last part of verse 27, in spite of all of the intrigue, in spite of all of his plans, Antiochus IV is actually fulfilling prophecy on God's timetable. It says here, at the appointed time. That wasn't the time that he decided for himself. That was the appointed time that God had prescribed. Listen, if you don't understand this yet, God is in control of all events, past, present, future. He's the Lord of all. He's in control. And these rulers that come and these rulers that go and these political individuals that rise to power, listen, they're in the hands of God. God knows what he's doing. God has a determined end, an appointed time for all things. And so when you see things beginning to come up and you see this happening and you see what we saw tonight happening, just know this, God knew about it long in advance. It's all part of his plan. And he reveals to us through his word the end before it even takes place. And listen, the end is glorious. He wins. I mean, that's really what it all comes down to. In the end, he wins and he reigns. And we get to reign with him. Now, Antiochus IV ends up returning from Egypt with great riches. He won the battle there, surprised them with attacks, and he began then to manifest his hatred against the nation of Israel. And it's indicated in the statement that his heart shall be set against the holy covenant. Antiochus began to persecute the Jews. And in verse 29, it says, at the appointed time, he shall return and go toward the south. But it won't be like the former or the latter. For it says, for ships from Cyprus shall come against him. Therefore, he shall be grieved and return in rage against the holy covenant and do damage. And so he shall return and show regard for those who forsake the holy covenant. Antiochus IV set out on his final expedition to Egypt, but he was stopped by the Romans. As I said, the Romans are beginning to rise to power. They're taking control, and they stop him on his expedition, and he is forced to return back to Jerusalem. And in verse 30, Daniel prophesied this when he says that the ships from Cyprus shall come against him, and he'll have to return. And he returns in anger, and he turns on those that are part of the Holy Covenant. I mean, how does Daniel know that? How does Daniel know that this guy, Antiochus IV, is going to go into battle and he's going to seek to attack Egypt and Rome's going to withstand him coming with ships from Cyprus and he's going to have to return and he's going to turn on the Jewish people? I mean, it's just amazing. Am I the only one astounded? What followed this abomination? Actually, what happens as he comes back and he returns, he ends up going in and committing what's called the abomination of desolation. That's what it says in verse 31. After he goes back in rage and anger and begins to persecute those of the holy covenant, persecute the Jewish people, it says, and the forces shall be mustered by him. They shall defile the sanctuary fortress. They shall take away the daily sacrifices and place their abomination of desolation. Those who do wickedly against the covenant, he shall corrupt with flattery. But the people who know their God shall be strong and carry out great exploits. You might want to underline that. That's a great verse. Once the abomination that brings about desolation took place, it actually prompted what is known in history as the Maccabean Revolt. You may be aware of that. But at this time within history, there were two factions within Judaism. There were the Hellenists, and they basically accepted the pagan practices of the Greek culture. And so he would appeal to them. Antiochus IV would appeal to them, and they would just do whatever he wanted. They would worship pagan at the pagan altars. There were the Hellenistic culture that embraced all of paganism. On the other hand, there were the traditionalists who were faithful to the Mosaic law and faithful to the old laws. And to avoid a civil war between these two factions, Antiochus made a decree and he outlawed Jewish rites and worship. And he ordered that the Jews worship Zeus rather than Yahweh. He wasn't just trying to Hellenize the Jews, but actually he wanted to eliminate all traces of Jewish culture completely. Now, of course, the Jews who were traditionalists revolted against this, against his decrees. And then Antiochus made a decree outlawing, or actually they rebelled against Antiochus because they weren't going to worship Zeus. And then he went and he raided the temple in Jerusalem. He stole the treasures and he went up and he set an altar in the holiest of places. And there set up an altar to Zeus, he sacrificed swine on the altar. That was the abomination which would bring about desolation for the Jews at that time. And when the Jews expressed their outrage and they rebelled against Antiochus, he slaughtered multitudes of them, sold others into slavery, and then he issued a decree that said performing the rite of circumcision amongst the Jewish people was punishable by death, and the Jews everywhere were ordered to sacrifice to pagan gods and to eat the flesh of swine. The response to this was the Maccabean Revolt, where the Jews took up arms and fought. In 167 and 166 BC, Judas Maccabeus, by the way, the word Maccabeus means hammerer. I like that. They led the Jews in a series of victories over the military forces of the Syrians and Greeks. And you can read about all of this in your history books. There's a lot of legend connected with it and a lot of truth connected with it as well. But after they defeated Antiochus and the Seleucids, the Jews went in and they cleansed the temple and restored it in 165. And ever since then, the Feast of Dedication, the Festival of Lights, or Hanukkah, as we know it, is celebrated to commemorate that meaningful event in Jewish history, even celebrated at the present time. And there's a lot more attached to that particular celebration that you can read about on your own time. But he persecuted the Jews, and he came against them and defiled their temple, and yet he was eventually overthrown and destroyed. But in verse 35, if you'd look there, "And some of those of understanding shall fall, to refine them, purify them, make them white." And notice this, "until the time of the end, because it is still for the appointed time." What happened with Antiochus IV was not the end. Antiochus IV serves as a picture or a type of another ruler who would come, who would be the Antichrist. And he would commit the abomination which brings about desolation during the tribulation period. And the fact, basically what you have in verse 35 is a transition from 200 years of history. Daniel now jumps forward into the future that, by the way, hasn't happened yet. Now, I want you to think about this for a second. If the 200 years of history that Daniel wrote in advance has already come to pass, if 135 prophecies in that chapter alone, as some scholars suggest, have already come to pass, don't you know that the rest of the future that Daniel wrote about is going to come to pass? That's really what it should remind you of. If the 69 7-year periods that Daniel predicted have already come to pass, that should tell you something. That the 70th week of Daniel will also come to pass. It's just a matter of time. Now, maybe if only 36 of the weeks came to pass, well, I don't know. I'm not sure that it could happen. 69 of the 7-year periods that Daniel predicted for the nation of Israel have come to pass already. It's in the history books, man. It's already taken place. There's one final 7-year period that has yet to be fulfilled. The 70th week of Daniel. And of all the stuff in the past that we just went over and I read to you and shared with you all the historical facts and pronunciation of the names. And listen, I worked on it. I'm not kidding you. I looked it up. How do you say this word? I wrote it out phonetically so that you would understand. If all of that's come to pass, guys, if there's one thing you walk away with tonight, and hopefully more than one, but if one, know this, what Daniel wrote and what Daniel was given will also come to pass. And you don't just have to take my word for it. You can take the words of Jesus for it. Because Jesus said, as it was written by Daniel, the abomination of desolation takes place. Jesus actually validated and verified the writing of Daniel. I love it.
Isn't that awesome? So we can be sure that the prophecy yet to be fulfilled will be one day. Jesus confirms it. Today on A Daily Walk, we heard just a portion of Pastor John Randall's study of Daniel. Catch a replay at adailywalk.org. You can also sign up for our free podcast at adailywalk.org or download our church app when you search for CCSJC. We also offer CD copies for a cost of $5. Here's our toll-free number, 877-242-0828. Again, that's 877-242-0828. Today, we picked out a book that really ties in nicely to our present series. Like Daniel, we're living in an unfriendly and even hostile environment to Christianity. Maybe recently it feels as though you're living among lions. Well, that's the title of the book we want to send you, Living Among Lions, by David and Jason Benham. As a slave living in exile, Daniel became one of the most powerful men in the world at that time. His conviction, commitment, and courage stand out to us and really serve to help him thrive in Babylon. Living Among Lions will help you do the same in today's Babylon. Order it online for a cost of $15 at adailywalk.org or call us at 877 1-800-242-0828. If you believe in what we're doing here at A Daily Walk, and sense God is leading you to support the work, we've tried to make it easy to donate online at adailywalk.org. You can also write to A Daily Walk, 31612 El Camino Real, San Juan Capistrano, California, 92675. Or call us toll-free, 877-242-0828. Stay connected with Pastor John through social media. Look for Pastor John on Twitter at PJRandall7 and on Instagram at John P. Randall. And then join us for our next study in the book of Daniel with Pastor John Randall on A Daily Walk. This is a presentation of Calvary Chapel, San Juan Capistrano.